Okay, we're talking about Joe Schumann, the managing
editor. Well, Joe Schumann was that time a city editor of the Buzz Gazette. And he saw something in me, which unfortunate, that he got my negative newspaper man. I should say that one of the other skills, fortunately, that I had in some moderate degree was the ability to write. And, well, I write only when there's a gun in my head. I didn't need to do that. And so Joe thought that my combination of interest, which is wide, curiosity, which is acute, might make a decent newspaper man out of it. And so he did give me a job, but a period when jobs were very hard to get, people were standing in line, obviously, for them, on the PG in 1934.
Now, I had read in the Pittsburgh Magazine at 75, you tell me if this is so, that as a 22-year-old, you wrote an article about the deplorable conditions at the Highland Park Zoo, which made page one of the Post Gazette and was instrumental in getting you a job.
Well, that's true. Joe was trying me out that night. And one of the things that Joe was interested in, as was his letter to the White and the Jane Phillips, was the zoo and what had happened to it. Well, that was where I could combine my zoological interest and my writing interest, and to a degree public and political interest. And so I wrote this story about the decline of the zoo.
Conditions
were very bad. And Joe ran it on the front page, really unedited, or just as I wrote it. Which
under your signature?
Under it with my byline. And unfortunately, it competed that morning with the Hitler's Purge. And the SA and the killing of Rome and the other people. So it didn't get the fullest attention. It should have been broken.
But it helped get you a job.
But it helped get me a job, yeah. So I worked at the Post Gazette as a general assignment reporter for 2 years. And looking back, I don't think I was as good a reporter as I should have been.
You were quite young.
But I was very young and brash, too.
How old could you have been at that?
I was 22.
Yeah.
And but Joe tolerated me, gave me a couple of raises, and thought ultimately I ought to be an editorial writer. I was not in sympathy with the political views of the Post Gazette at that time. At that time, the Post Gazette was a very conservative newspaper, very anti-New Deal. I was very ardently pro-New Deal. So I don't think I would have been a very good editorial
writer. It's been a conflict of interest.
Conflict of views. But as I say, Joe was extremely tolerant of my youthful errors. And I would have did expect me, I think, to stay with the paper for a reasonably long time.
And this was the period that you mentioned before that you were the only employed member of your family?
For the first part of that time, yes.
I see. Following the Post Gazette, according to your data, from 36 to 41, you were principal secretary to the mayor?
Yes.
And that had to be...
That was Mayor Cornelius D. Scully, yes. And that happened again through a... accident, in a sense, that Mr. Scully was associated in the practice of law with Alfred Wilner, J. Alfred Wilner. Perhaps you know Ruth Wilner.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'd gotten to know Al very well through my covering of the investigation of the University of Pittsburgh, which the legislature conducted in 1934. It's hard to believe that at that time a university could be investigated for being too conservative. But the Democratic legislature thought that Pitt had fired some faculty people because they were too much on the liberal or Democratic side. And so there was a legislative investigation of what?
Professor Turner was one of them, yeah.
And, yeah. He was the outstanding case.
Yeah.
And so the Post Gazette assigned me to cover the story because I was a recent Pitt graduate and had better contacts, they thought, on it. And I must have to say I was not impartial. I should have been, but I wasn't. And Wilner was the counsel for the legislative committee. So he and I got to be very friendly go through my reporting of the thing, through our discussion when it went on. And we formed a habit of having lunch from time to time. And Al ate with the Democratic bigwigs of the time, a special table at William Penn. And I got to know a number of the Democratic leaders through that. And when Scully unexpectedly became mayor due to McNair's resignation, it was the thought that he ought to have a newspaper man.
You have to refresh me a little on that. McNair resigned.
William N. McNair had been the first Democratic mayor of Pittsburgh, elected in 33. He fell out with the party very rapidly and with his council very.
He was a
very flaky guy, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he suddenly, when no one expected it, resigned. Mr. Scully was president of the council and became the mayor. And as I said, that he had a person staff. And fortunately for me, perhaps not so fortunate for him, they asked me if I would take it. At that time, all the more experienced Democrats were working for Governor Earle in Harrisburg, so they didn't have too much choice, apparently. So I got the job at the age of 24, which was a mistake on their part. I was much too young and inexperienced for it, but we survived. And so I stayed in the mayor's office, really, until World War II came along.
Well, what were your responsibilities?
Well, actually,
secretary?
Well, I was the founder of a tradition which has since been maintained, that the mayor's executive secretary, in effect, be sort of deputy mayor. My responsibility was to write the mayor's speeches and official papers, to handle patronage and sign the personnel, and to argue for policies. And I had much more power, actually, than I should have had. And so they made a good many mistakes, which I wouldn't make today. But we lived through it. And so I was, in a sense, at that age, kind of the city man, the mayor's assistant, both in managing the city and managing his politics.
That was quite an assignment at your age.
Yes, it was.
Did you meet with a lot of resentment?
Oh, yes.
Keeping contact?
Oh, yeah, made a great many enemies. Sure. And on the other hand, I was devoted to it, committed really to the ideals of the party, the Democratic Party at that time. And so I guess I was forgiven my sins. And again, at any rate, we did last. So we won an election in 37 and won another one very closely in 41. And I couldn't get a raise as the mayor's secretary because some of my enemies were in city council.
What was your salary then?
I think I started at $2,400, probably ended at $36,000 or something like that.
I see.
And so I wasn't being paid really in relation to the job. As I said, council, enough enemies in city council, I couldn't get a very good deal out of them.
How about your relationship with Scully?
Oh, it was very paternal. I mean,
I see.
He was a wonderful man, very kind to me, most tolerant to me.
Was he an effective leader?
Yeah, I guess the fair answer would be no. He did what he was possible. He was a very intelligent, humane, progressive man, but didn't have control either of the party machinery or the executive strength that one would expect. He had been a lawyer all his life. This was the first executive job he'd ever held. He had been a non-politician. And so he had weaknesses politically and administratively, which one could hope you wouldn't have. But as I say, we struggled through. We did a lot of very good things, including the beginning of the anti-smoke program late in his administration, the institution of public housing in Pittsburgh, which then was good. It's not that good today. And a very liberal, New Deal-oriented city administration.
Did he lay the groundwork, in a sense, for predate Lawrence's policies that followed?
Yes, very much so, because in many ways Lawrence's administration was a continuance of Scully's. It was literally it was a continuance because it came right afterwards. But this, Mr. Scully was mayor for 9 years, and I was with him for all those years until 1943 when I went into the Army.
You say you did run into some antagonism because of your extreme youth. Was any of it?
Combination youth, arrogance.
But not anti-Semitic.
I never felt so. As I say, I just never took that into consideration. It must have been, I'm sure there was a lot of muttering about it, but never was, I don't think, a major factor.
Following your visa, from 41 to 43, you're listed as Director of Welfare Activities.
Yeah. Well, that is a bogus title. Actually, what happened was that we merged the City Welfare Department and the City Health Department. And my assignment was really to get rid of what was then the Welfare Department. And this is one way I got a raise I was talking about. I really continued to do many of the things for the mayor that I'd done before. But my assignment was an interesting one. It was really to abolish my job. It was what I was to do, which we did successfully do, was transfer Mayview Hospital, which was in a city obligation, to the Commonwealth, to the state. And during those 2 years, my principal duty at that job was to prepare the legislation and see that it got executed. And to be trusted as one who, instead of trying to keep his job and his department, was trying to offload it. So this was sort of the new non-federalism in some areas.
What other aspects of welfare?
Well, that was the only one. That was the only one I could serve. Really. I did attempt to run the
institution. I see.
And that was, by the history, a blessing to the city of Pittsburgh, because we've been bankrupt long ago. We continue to have the. What happened was that the city hospital, the city at that time maintained Mayview, which was both a mental institution and a charitable hospital. And the cost of operating that would have soared enormously. We were very lucky, far-sighted, to transfer to the state. And so what happened was that the state then became the responsible arm of government for all mental institutions in Pennsylvania.
And this was your principal assignment?
That was my assignment, yeah, which I had selected for myself.
I see.
And I consider that one of the good things I've been able to do in my life.
From 43 to 45, then, you were in military service.
I was in military service with no distinction whatsoever. Made a tour of all the southern camps.
What branch of the service were you in?
I was trained as an anti-aircraft artilleryman, I guess you would call that. And there were too many of them because by that time we'd achieved mastery of the air, so there'd be the antis. And we got transferred into the infantry. And then I ended up as a sort of a trainer, training cadres of infantrymen, being sent as replacements to various divisions in the field. And my last assignment would have put me in military government, which is where I probably belong, in Japan. But fortunately, the war ended. And when the war was over, I had no compunction in trying to get out. I had no intention of wanting a military career. And so by that time, they were able to claim that my presence in Pittsburgh would best serve the good of the city. I never allowed them to do that when the war was on. When the war was over, obviously there was no point in staying in service if you get out of it. So I did get out in November 1945. And Lawrence had just been elected mayor of Pittsburgh. And he asked me to come to his office to be his executive secretary.
What was your rank in the Army?
PFC. I could have had two possibilities in the Army. I'd either be a good private or a good general. Nothing in between.
reading back on your war experiences, are they positive, negative?
Well, they were positive for me, actually, but principally because it separated me from City Hall for several years. I was able to look back much more realistically upon life and people. The feuds that I've had, or the difficulties I've had, seem to be solvable. If you want to have them, you're more sensible about them. And so I think I matured politically. I think I matured politically, at least, in the Army. And then, of course, I had the benefit of working with Ed Lawrence when I came back, and Lawrence was one of the great political leaders of this, certainly of this city and state.
Tell us something about Ed Lawrence.
Well,
man versus the politician.
Well, you can't separate the man and the politician, because politics was his life, really. But he was the most remarkable man I've ever known. A man of great courage, decisiveness, compassion, industry. Almost all the good qualities he'd want in someone. And he and I established until his death, was an extremely close relationship. And
was quite an influence in your life.
He was very much an influence in my life, and to some degree I was an influence in his. Mm-hmm. And obviously we had, whatever I've been able to do since was partly a reflection of the successes that were achieved in the Lawrence administration.
And you speak of the unfortunate error you made as a young man under Scully.
Yeah.
How did Lawrence come to select you?
Well, because of my good qualities.
That's a very logical answer.
Well,
had you had contact with him during the Scully years?
Yeah, well, at first our contacts were, I would think, certainly on his part, probably antagonistic. What was this guy doing, making trouble all the time? But gradually we got to know each other better, and then gradually also I began to write his speeches for him. And he enjoyed, he liked that, and we found, well, as I say, once we got to know each other, he got to know me. And I was never on the other side from him. I mean, I'd never done anything. If anything, my errors were those of excessive zeal. I'd made too many enemies fighting for his side, so I didn't have, and
he could accept that,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What were your responsibilities as executive secretary?
Well, just pretty much as I've described them regarding the Scully administration, except it changed in this respect. My major responsibility, again, of course, writing state papers, preparing formal speeches when they were necessary, seeing people and advising on policy, and to some degree, directing the flow of business at City Hall. But in the Lawrence administration, everybody has written by now, we came together with the civic groups in what was called the Pittsburgh Renaissance. And I was the mayor's principal liaison with the civic organizations, such as the Allegheny Conference, and the Pennsylvania Economy League, and Pittsburgh Regional Planning Association. And with professional groups in general, the intellectual side, if you can call that, of politics. And and that led me, of course, to become executive director of the Urban Redevelopment Authority when it was created.
What gave the Renaissance its initial impetus?
Well, I think, first, the period of coming together after the Second World War, and after the Depression, and a kind of an emergence of two forces. One was the strong political leadership of Mayor Lawrence, which had not been available under the previous administrations, either by the interest or the ability to control events. And the other was the fact that the business interest in Pittsburgh, particularly the Mellon interest, felt it was time to make some major changes in the public and private environment here. And those aims came together. And so we really had a merger, we had a commonality of interest, which was the improvement of the city. And the introduction of new instruments of government were necessary to procure that improvement.
Such as?
So, well, the Urban Redevelopment Authority, the Public Parking Authority, the Allegheny County Sanitary Authority, all of the auditorium authority. All these new things which had not been inherent in the city government before that, were reduced, and the completion of the program to eliminate smoke and make a large drive against air pollution, all those things were. And so the changes in government were really in my particular bailiwick. That's what I had to figure to charge up for the mayor.
Aside from the Mellons, who were other local industrial?
Well, a good many. I mean, of course, the Mr. Mellon, General Mellon, Richard K. Mellon, was not a figure you met every day in business or socially either. So he was relatively remote, but his people who worked for him, both in the bank and the T. Mellon and Sons, primarily Arthur Van Busker, now dead, and the ability of the Mellon influence to lead what other corporations in Pittsburgh in which they had a major interest would do, which would be Westinghouse and Johnson Lock on Pittsburgh Plate Glass. Well, you just kind of named the role. Individually, among other people, you had, other than the Mellon people, directly or through them, you had people independent of them who had their own fortunes, such as Jack Hines, who was still quite active in the city, and Henry Hillman, likewise, still active in the city, very much so. So it was really a coming together of the business community, which found that whatever economic rivalries they might have had were not relevant to what they did for Pittsburgh. And of course, one of them, particularly, was Edgar Cotton.
I was about to ask you if there were any Jewish community leaders.
Edgar Kaufman and I.B. Wolf and Leon Falk and A.L. Walt, councilman, and Dave Oldham, councilman, and Ann Alperin, of course, very strongly. See, Ann was city solicitor for much of this time. Did you get her before her death?
Yes.
Did you? Now, she was a very strong force for a long time. And so, as I say, Edgar Kaufman was represented the downtown mercantile interest, and was an original member of the Urban Redevelopment Authority board. And that also submerged or was able to avoid the conflicts between, as you might have expected, between Horns and Gimbels and Kaufman. So there was no fighting for position. Well, this will give me a short advantage over the others. There was a sense of we're all in this together. Whatever benefit you get today, I'll get tomorrow. So I think Edgar was very broad-minded in that respect. As well as being a man of great imagination, it was a pleasure to know and to work with. And again, you had some very unique people. These individuals, Lawrence himself, and Mellon himself, Van Busker himself, and Edgar. But don't replicate. I mean, they were very particular to their personalities and their times.
Mutual combination.
Their times, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was any one particular person responsible for forging the link between industrials and the political aspect?
Well, Lawrence, I think, of course, personally had to be, the initiative had to come
from him.
But I guess I was, on a working level, I was probably the most responsible person. But I worked what you could call a technician level with the staffs, the organizations, the corporations. Major parties to Delta Lawrence. How soon do you have to?
It had to be a very challenging.
Well, it was
assignment.
It was a great assignment, and it really made my life, because whatever I've been able to do since was basically because people thought that I'd been useful in this affair.
Was there strong opposition from some of the?
Oh, yes. Not as difficult as it would be today, because Lawrence, for one thing, had complete control of city council. And some of the petty arguments and wrangles that you get now, which caused delays, didn't occur in Lawrence's time. Also, you did not at that time have a strong, for good or ill, neighborhood groups or widespread organizations dealing with public issues, more of a development really in the 60s and 70s.
So you had a freer reign.
You had a freer reign, yes. And some of the things we did then would be difficult or possible, I suppose.
Such as?
Well, I'm trying to think. I guess it's more method. I don't think we could have worked as fast or as completely. Maybe could have, but we might have had some mistakes prevented too, with being able to go more slowly. But it was a time of great excitement in Pittsburgh. It was all new, bright and shiny. And so all of us came out of it. And I believe the city came out of it much better for it.
From 48 to 54, you were executive director of the Urban Redevelopment
yes.
Authority. You mentioned that before. Well, that was an offshoot of the whole.
Well, that was sort of the key element in much of the Renaissance.
Oh, I see.
It was and is the city's mechanism for changing land uses. In other words, if you're going to have a major development, you have to assemble property from a large number of owners. It's the only mechanism you have to prevent one or two holdouts from accomplishing, preventing the accomplishment. And it's also a sort of a catalyst and energizer. And we're still using the mechanism, perhaps more strongly now than ever, is the PDG development in downtown Pittsburgh.
How does the zoning authority relate to it?
Well, zoning is controlled by the Department of City Planning, the Planning Commission, and by the council. And it's the job of the authority to work out whatever zoning problems with those other bodies. It went a long step. I mean, it really became the executive arm of city planning, where zoning is sort of a preventive measure. What we could do under redevelopment is an aggressive reorganization of land use.
Mr. Lawrence, what was the Gateway Center project?
Well, Gateway Center is the one that the Redevelopment Authority in the Pittsburgh Renaissance perhaps best remembered for. You had 60 acres land. Yeah, 60 acres of land at the point in Pittsburgh, which was tremendously deteriorated. The old railroads, the old buildings from the old expedition days, the old Wabash Terminal. And it was generally an urban wasteland. And what was done at that time was to decide that 36 acres should become Point State Park. And having it been realized that the park would be created, you had a new type of environment under which you could do a new development for private purposes on its borders. And Gateway Center was the result of a negotiation between the Urban Redevelopment Authority, where I was executive director and the mayor was chairman, with the Equitable Life Assurance Society, which was an investor. And it resulted in the building, which is eight buildings today, which we call Gateway Center. And at the time, that was a very innovative, unprecedented type of program. Now, I won't say it's commonplace because you don't do them every day, but it's been done time and time and time again, not only in Pittsburgh, but in other cities. And so Gateway Center was the first big, very visible piece of the downtown of the Pittsburgh Renaissance. I was fortunate to be in a position where I got some of it rubbed off on me because I was the expediter of the process.
Well, it has to be a satisfaction to you
sure.
Walk through that area.
Oh, sure.
Well,
I like
you had a hand in that.
Well, I've been quoted as saying we ought to tear the first three buildings down.
It's time for a new Renaissance.
That's what we're having now, sure. But, I mean, the architecture, that's something you desire to do it better today.
Who was the architect?
Well, there wasn't any. That's a big problem. That was the first three buildings. There was a committee on design, which met in New York, and you had one architect for the buildings, another architect for landscaping, another architect, and so on. So there was no total architect. There wasn't enough concern with the siding turned out to be good. No problem with that, I think. But the style of the buildings could have been created.